That's funny, though.
My chair doesn't even stay up now. I just sit on it, and my ass goes all the way to the floor.
It's your karma. Tim and I have been here working hard for the past few days.
All right, fine. Fine. I'm not going to be bitter. I'm going to move half and rise above it. I'm a professional. What I do. Let me adjust my microphone here. Okay, doesn't matter. I don't need a chair. I don't need nice things. I don't need anything. All right. All I need is my razor sharp wit. Why, hello. It is 2 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of February, in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed and germ-filled studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. And it just wouldn't be a Monday without Sarah coming in and putting half a gallon of Purell onto her hands.
Oh, it's a Wednesday, my friend.
It's Wednesday.
Is it a Monday?
It's a Monday to me.
It's also Ash Wednesday.
Is it really?
It is.
Eat your ashes? Was yesterday Fat Tuesday?
Well, I guess
yes,
it must be.
Yeah.
That's why all those drunken morons had necklaces on.
They were actually in San Diego, which is where I was yesterday. They were having party gras. That's what they called it. Except for this one street in San Diego, this one place near Point Loma where they were doing Mardi Party. Gave me all kinds of weird, like, KGA flashbacks and so forth.
Oh, that kind of disappoints me. I was kind of jealous of everyone's sparkly necklaces. I didn't get any.
No. I completely forgot. You know, the thing is, when you're not a drunk...
Like, you'd go out anyway.
No, that's what I'm saying. If you're not a drunk or a Catholic, and usually being one makes you the other, if you're not a drunk or a Catholic, there are so many holidays that you can only keep track of if you're religious or if you're a junkie of some kind. And so, since at this point in my life I'm not a big booze hound, and since at this point in my life I'm not a Catholic, I have no recollection, and unless there's a station event involved, unless Paul Halama has pimped us out to somebody for the day, which didn't happen this year, unless Paul Halama has taken us out to the street and whored us out like a donkey, remember we did the, and I say that with love, by the way. That's not an insult.
Oh, we love us some Paul Halama.
Yeah, Paul Halama is our pal. I'm just saying, that's how I keep that. That is how the calendar in my head works. The calendar in my head works on, like, days that Jesus died for me, days that people drink, days that Paul Halama has us going and dancing and, juggling for people. None of those things happened this Mardi Gras, so I forgot about it. So today is Ash Wednesday. All right, we should have a drinking game for everybody we see in the hallway that has ash on their forehead. Wait, hold on. I'm going to look at Joe in the production
room. Wait, we don't see anybody, though.
I'm going to look at Joe next door in the production room.
We should send Scotty J up with a cell phone to wander through the cubicles upstairs.
No.
Joe doesn't have ash on his forehead.
Joe does not have ash on his forehead.
Maybe he's not Catholic.
Hold on. Let me look. Not Catholic. What kind of a country is this? Let me look at Bozick over in KUFO. Hold on. No, Bozick doesn't appear to be a good Catholic either.
Maybe they're getting their ashes later tonight.
There's some sort of a joke there. Getting their ashes, something. There's some sort of a...
Getting their ash kick.
There ought to be, I can say this because I'm a Catholic, there ought to be some porn store giveaway where it's like Ass Wednesday. And you go in there and it's the sin before the repentance.
That is a horrible idea.
Ass Wednesday.
I can't even muster a fake chuckle.
I'm Catholic. I can make that joke. In your face, everybody. All right. Ass Wednesday. And then Fat Tuesday, it would be like with a PH. Hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. Aren't you glad I'm back from Best Of? Isn't this company gold of dishing out right now? It's 3-4 minutes after the hour of 11. It's 503-733-2970. You want to be part of today's program for whatever unknown reason. 503-733-2970. You can also email us if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. You want to be engaging with us in an electronic sense. rick@rickemerson.com. You can also telephone us. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It is Wednesday. Ash Wednesday, apparently. And then is Thursday anything? Is it Fat Tuesday? Ash Wednesday, Good Friday. Does Thursday just get skipped over? There is no appellation for Thursday.
I think it's Holy Thursday.
Thirsty Thursday. Three for Thursday, and then Good Friday. three for Thursday because the Holy Trinity. Only funny to me. Doesn't matter. And then there's whatever Good Saturday.
That's where they just ran out of names for things, right? Good Friday. Well, what about the next day? Good Saturday. And it's well, Good Sunday. You know, just keep on going forever. Anywho, well, it's Ask Wednesday. 503-733-2970. This would happen, by the way, every year in Utah when I lived there. In Utah, where it is, of course, heavily Mormon, on Ash Wednesday, you'd get a handful of Catholics that would show up at the office. And if you don't know what Ash Wednesday is, it's where they burn palm leaves, because they're a bunch of damn pagans. They burn, and they because it's Ash Wednesday, where they burn palm leaves and try desperately to pretend that it's not just a bunch of juju. They burn palm leaves, and then they put, I swear to God, a cross on your forehead made out of ashes.
But it never looks like a cross, it just looks like a big black smudge.
It just looks like you've got frostbite. That's what it looks like. And on this day, Jesus was lost in the Himalayas and his skin did slough away. That's what it looks like. It looks like you've got frostbite. Anyway, and so on Ash Wednesday, the couple of Catholics that we had, followers of Cathol, they would come to the office and they would have the ash cross on their forehead, and without fail, and this happens where you work too probably, without fail, there'd be a guy who would come up to the to Ash Boy in the hallway and go like, hey, Bob, no, Bob, you got a little something on your face. No, just hold on. No, to the left. No, up, no, left, there. You know, always. Because the Mormons...
No. We've got to find someone, A, that has ash on their forehead, and B, send Scotty J. up, wired with the telephone. Yeah, to be able to say
that. Something
on
your head.
Yeah.
Let me just dog. And then do that disgusting thing where he licks the tissue.
He
whips
out like a handy wipe and be like, let me get that for you. Let me see the reaction.
And daubs it on his tongue. Let me get that off. Yeah. Anyway, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Hear this? Right here? Right there. That's the sound of not much show prep today. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I've got show prep. You just can't. It's right here. It's just not assembled. Normally, I assemble it into some sort of a matrix. It's not one, and it's all from last week. No assembly required.
No, there's a lot of assembly required. It just hasn't been done. No assembly accomplished.
Because I was gone and whatnot. So anyway, so we got a bunch of crap to get through today. We're going to talk to Lisa Goddard about something or other. How are we talking to Lisa Goddard?
Are we talking to Lisa?
We are. We're talking to Lisa. Oh, apparently the British are pulling out just the billions upon billions of troops that they have in Iraq. I thought they were all gone. Well, whatever. So the British are leaving.
They're in the peaceful area of Iraq.
Mm.
That welcomes people with flowers.
Okay. Jim Roop is going to be in Los Angeles. He's going to talk to us about Britney Spears. And then Ed McCarthy will probably be drinking and talking to us, which is appropriate, and talking to us about Anna Nicole Smith. It all kind of works together. Part of life's rich pageant. What else? We'll talk to our good friend Mr. Skin from MrSkin.com today. Find out who nudes up at the theater. Boy, I saw the worst movie. And I can say it because my wife is still on vacation. My wife is gone for another 10 days, so I can speak freely for the time. I can speak freely, Scotty J style, for the time being. Boy, if somebody you love or somebody that you... I mean, really, unless you're absolutely sure that there's sex at the end of this tunnel, if somebody you know tries to get you to see music and lyrics, I want you to go throw yourself off
of
something.
Oh, is that the Drew Barrymore?
Yes, it is.
I really wanted to see
it. Yeah, terrible.
Really?
It's awful.
The reviews say they're both aging gracefully.
It is. It's so bad. It's so bad. I mean, here's what I will say
about it. It's really that bad.
It's not the worst movie ever.
Like Driving Miss Daisy?
It is. If you are, I hate to say this, if you're a girl, if you have an X chromosome, it is probably a likable film. It is probably maybe a pleasing way to pass 90 minutes on a Saturday if you don't have much else to do. But you're never going to...
A couple bottles of wine with some girlfriends.
Yeah, but you know what? You're never going to think about it again. You're going to watch it and you will forget about it.
You're thinking about it.
I'm only thinking about it. It's like looking... It's like when you sprain your ankle. And the next day you're like, how did I... Oh, yeah. Ow. You will never think about it again. It will slide out of you like so much butter covered whatever. You'll watch it and it'll be gone. It'll be gone like Kleenex in the wind. It's not the worst movie ever made. And I have to say that I like Hugh Grant a lot. I really do.
I love Drew Barrymore.
See, and I don't. She's just too cute. She's too cutesy and googly-eyed. And
no, it's because you have that weird issue with thinking that she's, you know, 5 years old.
It's not really. Well, that's part of it, because I always picture her as what's her name from E.T. and Charlie from Firestarter.
Oh, but she's older than that now.
She is. But the other thing is that she doesn't really... She's just a collection of... And I'm one to talk. She's just a collection of tics. That's the thing. She's just a collection of, like, nervous mannerisms in this movie. Like, she's all, like... Because he's the polished...
Is she kooky?
She is. Well, because he's the polished songwriter, you know, and he's, you know, he's over the hill, but he's sort of the Andrew Ridgely of Wham. I mean, that's clearly who he's modeled on. He's modeled on the guy in Wham that's not George Michael, where he was in this big, you know, Wham-type group, and then the lead singer left and had a huge solo career, and he's sort of touring state fairs and just living on royalties and whatever. You know, but he pulls it off really well, but he's got a certain dignity and a certain whatever. And she's, I'm not giving anything away, she's his plant waterer. That's how they meet. She comes and waters his plants. And she, like, trips a lot and waters the plastic ones and
does
forgets to water
of, like,
the real ones.
Multicolored scarves?
And yeah, and she's all bangly. You know what I mean? When I say bangly, she has a lot of, like, chunky sort of jewelry, sort of whatever.
Oh, my God, you need to stop doing that little wrist thing.
No,
right
I'm
now.
Saying that she's
you look like you're dancing.
I'm dancing queen. That, you know, she wears a lot of, like, big clothing that allows her to sort of look like a free spirit. That's the thing. She's the free spirit.
Is it like one... What's that movie with Charlize Theron and Keanu Reeves?
Someone's oh,
like,
God.
Sweet November.
Yeah, where she, one of them's got a cancer. One of them's got a tumor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never saw that.
She's all crazy and, you know, and he's really businessman. And she
it's so terrible.
Him.
It's so terrible. The only thing that sucked me into seeing it was the premise, which is that, you know, because I, you know, I'm interested in music and so forth. And the idea that he's got like 36 hours to write a hit song for a sort of Britney-type girl and that they end up being a collaboration. That and the fact that the song they write, and again, I'm giving nothing away, that he's got like 36 hours. That's the premise of the movie. He's like this Britney Spears type girl. He's like, I need a new song in 36 hours, and I want you, Hugh Grant, to write it. And so he teamed, but he can't write lyrics. He can only write music. So he teams up with Drew Barrymore to write the song. The actual song in the film is written by the guy from Fountains of Wayne. So that's the only reason. That was it. That was the thing that got me to. That was the thing that got me to go see it. Scotty's putting these. I'll try to get to some of these here in a second. Thank you, Scotty, these calls aren't actually appearing on the screen, so you can take care of that. Anyway, but the actual song they write was written by the guy from Fountains of Wayne who wrote That Thing You Do. And so that was the final thing that got me to go see it. I'm like, oh, it has Adam Schlesinger.
And
songs.
That was the song?
Yeah, it's bad.
Oh.
So there you go. So I don't even know what I was talking about. Anywho, so we're back. It is Wednesday. So we had Lisa Goddard coming in today, Jim Roop, Ed McCarthy, Mr. Skin. We'll try to do a top five today. And there's all of this news happening that I wouldn't even, because I left on Friday and I wasn't here Monday. And Monday was a holiday, but there was still like Anna Nicole Smith stuff happening, I think. And then
it was a holiday for you, maybe.
Yeah.
And Scotty and I were here.
I know. I appreciate that. Rick Emerson appreciates it. He really does. And then there was Tuesday. And then, now, what is it? Somebody told me that there was Anna Nicole Smith. Understand this. When I go on vacation, I don't... for a guy who really is accused of being kind of a workaholic sometimes, I just turn it off when I go on vacation news-wise. I didn't crack a newspaper. I didn't go online. I didn't... the only news I saw was if, like, we would walk by a TV or if we were, like, in a bar or something where a TV happened to be on and I would happen to see headlines up there. So I don't know anything about anything. I know that when I left, it was all Anna Nicole and Britney. And that's it. And James Brown was still not buried. That's all I know. So I know that you guys did some news feed yesterday, or there was like a Mystery Science Theater sort of. You guys accompanied the Anna Nicole news feed yesterday.
We did because the public demanded it.
Well, of course.
Well, it's mesmerizing. You can't stop watching.
Well, no,
it's a freak show.
Yeah, no, I'm not criticizing.
And it has a great judge.
Oh, that judge is gold.
That judge makes this trial.
He's fantastic.
Did you see him like kind of putting up his feet yesterday when he was talking in the
mic? I haven't seen anything.
Oh man.
So here's what we should do, Scotty. If you just screen these calls and I'll kind of take these as they come in.
Scotty, I put in a couple news stories. If you could grab them from the promo room, that'd be awesome.
Fix me a turkey pot pie.
Please.
So here's what we'll do. This is what we got to do today. Before we get to all the actual stuff, later we'll talk a little bit about the storm show on Friday at Dante's, which was a good time for most, not all. and where I was pointedly not introduced to Sarah's new beau, by the way.
He's not
so I'd
my
like
new
to
beau.
Thank you for that.
I really thought that I introduced you.
Here's how I know he's your new beau.
You shut it.
Oh. Everybody knows you kissed. I'm not giving anything away. We're not in fifth grade. Every time I look over, it's a whole lot of...
And can you not talk about this on the air, please?
I'm just saying.
Stop.
I'm saying you kissed. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying nothing more. And I'm just saying thank you for not introducing me to him. I appreciate that.
Well, now I'm glad I didn't introduce you.
What, because I'd point out that you'd kissed him? Which you've already said on the air, by the way.
Oh, no, you tricked me.
Okay. So, anyway, so thanks for
that. I'm sorry. I really thought I did.
Uh-huh.
I think you were just distracting me with all the... Every time you'd run up, you would tell me something new that Scotty J had said.
Oh, God.
And it would just distract me.
God, you know, Scotty J on Friday, I don't... Where to begin with that guy? Where to begin? Where to end? At court, I would imagine, for the latter part. In any event.
So
here's what we got to do. Later on, we will talk a little bit. We'll talk about the Storm gig on Friday, which was amazing. The gig itself, and then other stuff. Let's just do this now. Let's find out what Tim Riley is working on at the news desk. Tim, what story is he working on for the people's edification?
Okay, Howard K. Stern has been cruel to me, bellows Anna Nicole's tearful, heartbroken mom. She profited from her daughter's death, claims Stern's lawyer. Is Britain withdrawing troops to get Prince Harry off the hook for serving in Iraq? And we do know now why Britney cut off her hair, and she's already escaped from that Malibu rehab she went to yesterday.
Somebody needs to tag her with one of those ear things.
And a Portland man calls 911 after suffering a Viagra reaction.
Fantastic. All right, so there you go. So we got that, and then as many of you know, if you're listening Friday, the reason I was gone Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I just got back. I didn't think I was going to make it in time. The plane was actually early. I got off the plane at 9:20 today. But then 84 was just like, it was a standstill for no readily, I mean, at almost 10 o'clock for no reason. So I got here like 10:15. So I did make it in on time. But I was gone this weekend because I was in San Diego, and Laura and I had booked this a long time ago. Aaron Sorkin, who is and everybody knows him, he's the guy who is the creator and writer of The West Wing, creator and writer of Studio 60, creator and writer of Sports Night. He wrote A Few Good Men. He wrote all the speeches you remember from the movie Malice with Alec Baldwin. He's a legend. He's one of my real true heroes and influences. He had a new play debut this weekend in San Diego, La Jolla, actually, and we bought tickets online like way early. And did I mention this? I did mention this on Monday.
You did.
That I got to meet him, which is just like the coolest thing ever.
How did that transpire?
I'll tell the story later. I know, because we got to get to the news recap here, I think, in just a few. And I realize that me meeting Aaron Sorkin really matters to me and almost really no one else. But it is a cool story, so I'm going to tell it later real briefly. And we'll kind of move on. The great thing about meeting Aaron Sorkin, though, I will say this. The one really cool, indisputably cool thing about it is, and nerdy, is that I actually get to check someone off my MySpace people I'd like to meet list. If it's a MySpace, you have that. Who I'd like to meet. And then it's like a bunch of people you will never, ever, ever meet in your life. And Aaron Sorkin is one of my three who I'd like to meet. And so I actually get to take him off, which is cool. So I'm going to write a whole little geeky, dorky blog about it. And then never get laid. No, I got to meet someone on my MySpace list. I did not share that with him, but I should have done it. I should have carried a little spiral pad with me. And then, thanks, Aaron. And then open it and just check it off the list right in front of him. Do you know Rush Limbaugh's email address, by the way? All right. So before we do any of that, though, is Scotty fetching something?
He was supposed to. I haven't seen him once.
Scotty J, if you could come to the studio, please. He was fetching a pail of water. I didn't even catch that. Here's how I want to handle the news, and then we'll get these calls that are coming in. I get these calls now, but they're not screened. They could just be lunatics. Scotty J. All right, he's entering the studio now. Hi, Scotty. How you doing?
Doing great.
I'm unable to see the calls on the screen. And so they could just be maniacs, as far as I know. I have no way of knowing if these calls are any good, what they refer to.
They're always good.
Okay.
That's not true.
Can you
re-put it back on there? You mean the technical term? You mean close and open? Yes, I'm closing and opening it now. The sound of radio is being turned up everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, the supernova. Did anybody call in about supernova on Monday?
No.
I don't believe so. Okay, save it for me, because it's gold.
This guy has a joke.
Okay, thank you.
Scotty, could you run to the promo room? Thanks.
All right, thank you. All right.
Could get me a piece of key lime pie.
And my shoes. So,
I've been freaking out. I feel bad. I've been leaving Scotty J out all the morning.
Oh, it's fine. He's a grown boy.
Not bad, everything that
drinks a lot of whiskey.
Oh.
With what money he has left.
Oh, Rick. That's not fair. You can't take things you're not going to talk about on the air.
Oh, I'm going to talk about part of it. Ding. All right. So here's
sometimes you got to let the ladies treat.
Why, whatever do you
mean?
You're
growing a radio boy.
I'm just giving him a little advice.
Word of advice, Scotty.
From someone who's been in the business many, many years and seen them come and go.
You don't gotta pay for it, baby.
Put that wallet away.
I love this show. It pains me to be gone for even a day. Okay, so here's what let's do. Let's go to the Ministry of Truth now. And here's how we're going to get caught up. I am just going to ask you, Tim, and you, Sarah, questions about the day's events, about the big stories, Brittany and Anna Nicole and so forth. And I'm going to find out what has happened over the last 2 days, because I have not followed any of the stories for the last couple of days. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, prophet, personal seer, and revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
So let's go back in time, because that's where we'll spend most of our time. In case you missed it yesterday.
It doesn't really work when you do it that way.
I guess it doesn't, does it?
No, in fact, wait, hold on, let me just...
We need a little music.
Let's go back in time where we... No, that doesn't really work.
No, it doesn't. Right.
So this is because I, as again, just to recap...
So we're going to the Anna Nicole burial trial, basically, what this is.
Here's what
happened. And it was awesome.
When I left on Friday... Brittany had her hair. All I know is that she shaved it, because I got home and it was on drudge, like Brittany goes bald, and I text messaged Sarah Friday night at like midnight, like, Brittany has gone over edge, call now. And so Sarah called me, what's up? And I said, Brittany shaved her head, and said, no way! And I said, yeah, way! And then Sarah and I giggled, and then we hung up the phone. And so when I left on Friday, Brittany had her hair.
Mm-hmm.
No one had knew anything about the Anna Nicole Smith trial.
Right.
And I mean, that was it. So what has transpired, Tim and Sarah, in the last 2 days? What did I miss?
Well, you missed yesterday's. What are we supposed to do with the Anna Nicole Smith body program? And Howard K. Stern testified about the nature of their 10-year relationship.
She was my best friend, my lover,
please,
the mother of my daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like a soft rock song.
I mean, literally everything, the whole world.
She was my sister, mother, secret lover.
And he said something creepy, too, when the judge...
He always thought she'd die.
Yeah, I like licking her spine.
In a lot of ways, always thought she was going to die young, and she said that. She thought that she was going to be like Marilyn Monroe.
That's the word of a supportive lover right there. She thought she was going to die young, and I went along with it.
So, he had made burial arrangements in the Bahamas before her death.
Bahamas. So she picked out the two double plots side by side that Daniel is currently resting in, and where she wants to be as well.
Okay, so where is the kid buried, Daniel? In the Bahamas, and that's where Howard K. Stern is saying she wants to be buried.
That's correct.
Well, because as long as she's in the Bahamas, that means that he stays the girl's father.
Is that true?
He's legally in the Bahamas.
What kind of government do they have down there in the Bahamas? Is it just like some sort of banana republic? Where you, like, if you have enough
it's
money?
It's a coconut republic.
It's a papaya republic.
It's a kiwi republic.
The kumquat republic. How far can we take this? So is there just no law down there? I mean, is that the thing? As long as you're there, you can just say whatever. I'm the king. And this people just, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, whatever. Okay. So he's, the kid's already buried there.
Yes.
He's saying that she wants to be buried next to the kid.
Because she no longer considered Texas her home.
The Bahamas was her home. It's where she wanted to raise Daniel. And she wanted Daniel to be near her.
Okay.
And she was pretty firm on that decision.
All right.
So when all this is going on, your favorite undertaker, Dr. Joshua Perper, calls live on TV and says, this body is not going to last very long.
Their opinion was that if the body should be viewed and looked fine, the viewing should be done this week, Saturday or before.
So this viewing should be done this week. That's the only
thing
I caught there.
In other words, they wanted to continue to do tests on the body for the next couple of weeks. However,
she's gone all mushy.
Mr. Perpy says the body is deteriorating at an alarming rate.
They said that if it's next week, they are not sure that they can guarantee that there are not going to be changes which are going to interfere with the appearance, especially of the face of the deceased.
He said the body should remain in Florida for funeral service.
Whoever has the custody of the body would agree to have the viewing here in Broward and then ship the body to the place of burial.
Yes, I don't understand a single word, except that apparently she's just turning into mush.
She's decaying.
Right. She's gone all
oatmeal. So the judge says there will be a decision about what to do about Anna Nicole this week.
The court's going to render a decision by the end of this week. That's all. Let the chips fall as they may. We're on an expedited fashion.
Do you want I should come over and give you a little chin music? I love that guy.
He's great. So during an interview with Mark Steins of Entertainment Tonight, which was played in the courtroom yesterday, Anna defended how she treated her son.
He didn't do drugs, and he didn't do this, and he didn't do that. But how does she know? She didn't know my son. She didn't know my son. She didn't know him, and she didn't know me. She never ever wanted to know me, because she was too jealous of me.
Wait, that's Anna Nicole talking about the mom?
The thing is, the son lived with the mom for 7 years while she was running around trying to be a floozy.
During the first 7 years of his life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's now when was he born? Was that after she was already famous?
When she was she was born after she worked at the chicken place.
Yeah, that was the fry cook guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, because she was like 16 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So maybe she ran the register and he deep fried the chicken. We don't know.
And so
maybe she deep fried.
Now, what is the mom's interest in all this though? Because the mom. Well, no, Sarah's giving the money thing, but the mom's not going to get custody of the baby.
She wants to bring the body back to Texas.
And she's trying to get custody. She's saying how there are all kinds of little cousins and stuff living in Texas. They all play together.
There's all kinds of little cousins everywhere. All right.
She also said she had feelings for her mom.
I used to cry after you. I used to cry after you from day. Even when I had my baby girl, I cried for you. And you asked Howard, I cried for my mom.
It was a long time between visits with her mom.
The last time I got a beating from my mother, I think I was 21 years old.
A beating?
And before that was the big gap.
She's a police officer.
I left home when I was 15.
She was emotional and distraught when her son died.
I was sedated, I'll tell you that. The doctors had me sedated. It was tough and it was bad. My son died.
I don't understand. She got a beating from her mom when she was 21?
She claims.
Right.
Maybe she deserved it.
Maybe she was uppity. All right. Well, I mean, it sounds like maybe a few more beatings might have been in order.
Actually,
really?
The court's going to start again in about 3 minutes.
All right. Well, do we have to break here?
Yeah, we need to.
All right. Well, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We got into Brittany and her shaven head. Whatever the hell that's all about. Honestly, I don't even know. I don't know whether she's in rehab or not. It seems like it's changing by the minute. So we'll come back. We'll continue to get you up to speed on Anna Nicole Smith, Britney Spears. Apparently there's an election of some kind happening in the future, but no one really cares about that. It's and I'll talk about meeting Aaron Sorkin. I'll tell that story while Lisa Goddard's on the phone. She'll be interested. It's 503-733-2970, and you know that's true. 503-733-2970. You stay right there. We'll get these phone calls as well. Don't go anywhere. Program. Rick, this email says, I had the misfortune of seeing music and lyrics with my wife on Valentine's Day. Aside from losing an hour and a half of my life in a crowded theater filled with other equally disappointed husbands, significant others, all I could think of every time there was a close-up of Hugh Grant's hideously aged face was Troy McClure of Simpsons fame, who you may remember from such films as... God, it was awful. Glad you're back, Joel. I actually like Hugh Grant. Here's the thing about Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant has sort of found his niche, I think, with guys. Because women always liked him because he was adorable and fluttered his eyelashes a lot and sort of looked, sort of foppish and whatnot. But guys always hated him because he just looked like a little puppy dog. And so guys instinctively hated him. The thing about Hugh Grant is... Hugh Grant figured out that he had to start playing cads, and as soon as he started playing guys who were just like a-holes, that's when he found that's what he was meant to do.
Like About a Boy is a perfect role.
About a Boy is a perfect role, and even Bridget Jones' Diary is really good. And in this, he just, or, it's not, What is it, Love Actually? Where he's not really a cad as such.
I actually just watched that yesterday.
That's a great movie. That's the definitive romantic comedy. That's the best romantic comedy that's ever
Colin
been made.
Colin Firth, oh, so good looking.
he's
also in Bridget Jones' Diary as well.
I'm telling you right now. I mean, and it's a bold statement to make, but Love Actually is the definitive. And yes, I am a man, and the buddy who has a problem with me pontificating on this can just stuff it. Love Actually, in my opinion, speaking for me now, is the definitive romantic comedy. Period. End of story. It's the last one that ever needs to be made. Any romantic comedy made from now on is just a thinly veiled ripoff of a small section of that film. Anyway, And he does look old, though. Hugh Grant in music and lyrics.
How did Drew Barrymore look?
Craig-tastic. What?
How did Drew Barrymore look?
Like a toad. Like she always...
Big like
weird,
toad.
Bulging frog eyes. and like
you're so mean.
She doesn't do anything for me. And here's the thing. Final observation, because I'm sure Lisa Goddard doesn't want to sit on hold and be made awkward by my musings on the sexuality of Drew Barrymore, but I'm going to say this. Final observation. It's not just that Drew Barrymore, to me, always, that I always think of her as being a child actress, which I think is all a generational thing. I think a lot of guys my age always think of her as being, what's her name, Gertie from E.T. It's not that. Because, you know, there's other girls that you see grow up that you can appreciate, like, you know, Jodie Foster, different example, obviously, different kind of actress. But, you know, you saw her when she was, like, 11 years old in Freaky Friday or whatever. But, you know, you can appreciate her as an adult actress in older films. The thing about Drew Barrymore is... And there's all kinds of different ways to categorize how someone is attractive. Drew Barrymore is cute, and I would say pretty. She is just not sexy, though. There's just nothing sexy about her.
Well, she doesn't try to be sexy. She doesn't play sexy roles.
Yeah, but sexy isn't something you try to do. You either are sexy.
That's Charlie's Angels.
You are either sexy or you're not. You don't try. If you're not sexy, you can't try hard enough and make yourself sexy. And if you are sexy, you can't play it down. It's just a thing. It's just there. And the example I always use is Sandra Bernhardt, who is a really weird-looking woman in many ways. Got a sexy vibe to her. There's no man anywhere would dispute that. You can say she's weird looking, which she is. She'd be the first to acknowledge that. But she's sexy. It's just something about her.
Was this the Aaron Sorkin conversation you were dreaming of Lisa hearing while she's on hold?
No. No, the Aaron Sorkin conversation really is fantastic, though. And how perfect, ladies and gentlemen, from the Hill, come on, with the West Wing music. From the Hill, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Hello there.
Hey, so you don't think Drew Barrymore was sexy in Poison Ivy?
Oh, she was slutty in Poison Ivy.
Yeah, slutty and sexy are not necessarily the same thing.
Yeah, I was something I was way too young to watch that. It made me very uncomfortable.
It's true, I know, and it makes me uncomfortable now.
Yeah, sexy and...
Tom Skerritt, I don't want to see him doing that.
Sexy and loose are not really the same thing. There's a great scene in Match Point, which is a Woody Allen film from about a year and a half ago, where...
a terrible film.
Match Point?
Yeah, it's horrible to watch.
I didn't pass any judgment. I just said it was a Woody Allen film.
No, you said a great film.
I did not. You're projecting.
Lisa, did you hear him say great film?
I didn't hear that.
Okay. No. Somebody's projecting.
I might have missed it. I was following my own thoughts for your fast-paced conversation.
My point is, regardless of whatever the relative merits of Match Point is, I think it's a good film. I don't know if it's a good Woody Allen film, but it's a good film. There's a sequence where what's-his-name is talking to Scarlett Johansson, and he says, "You're very pretty." And she actually says, "I'm not pretty, I'm sexy." And she said, "My sister's the pretty one, I'm the sexy one." And that's totally true. She kind of has, it's such an overused term, but she has like a smoldering kind of a thing. And Drew Barrymore is just so... She's innocuous to me. She's just so pretty and cute, but there's just nothing there. There's just no body to it, no substance to it. I'm sure she's a nice person. She's very pretty. She's not an unattractive girl. There's just no sort of sensuality to her. So that is just my take as a guy. I'm sure there's a lot of guys who disagree with me. I'm just saying that's my thing. So, anywho. Moving on. Hey, who wants to hear about how I met Aaron Sorkin this weekend?
I do.
Do you really?
I actually do. I do. No one else has heard so far. You're not repeating. I really want to hear.
This is actually, no one has heard this story. I was actually saving it for this segment of the program because I knew that you would appreciate it, and we use the West Wing, and I'm the music, and I'm a political junkie, and so forth. So I am a huge Sorkin fan, as everybody knows, going back to Sports Night and,
Show.
Yeah, and A Few Good Men, which... doesn't really hold up as well now as it did when it came out, but a great writing nonetheless, and he, you know, he won an award for the stage show of that, and blah, 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 blah. He had, and I've been looking forward to this for months, in San Diego this past weekend, actually in La Jolla, at the La Jolla Playhouse, they did a debut, a premiere, of his new stage play, which is called The Farnsworth Invention. And the Farnsworth of the title is Philo T. Farnsworth, who is a Utah farm boy who invented television. And as a great man once said, I don't mean he invented television like Milton Berle invented television. I mean he invented the television. Just some guy, no college education, 1 year of high school or whatever the hell, and just like invented TV in his barn.
He died without reaping the profits ever from that.
He died, and again, I'm not spoiling anything because this is all historical fact, but he died drunk and broke and obscure because, according to a prevailing school of thought, David Sarnoff, who was head of NBC, stole television from him and underhandedly patented television without giving Farnsworth credit. That's one interpretation of the events.
Right.
And Sorkin has had a huge thing for this story for a long time. There are Farnsworth references that pop up as far back as Sports Night. And in fact, the Matthew Perry character on Studio 60, which is sort of Aaron Sorkin's doppel, that character, on Studio 60, the Matthew Perry character is working on a stage play about Nikola Tesla being stolen, having radio stolen from him. So there's very clearly like a parallel there. Anyway, so this weekend in La Jolla was the debut of this new Aaron Sorkin play. And I look forward to new works from Aaron Sorkin like other people look forward to the second coming of Jesus. And so my wife and I have had tickets to this for the longest time. And as we got closer to this, I'm like, wow, you know, we got tickets for opening night. How cool, you know, maybe Sorkin will be in the building somewhere. What if I caught a glimpse of him, you know, sitting down front or whatever? How cool would that be? And I can now give credit where it's due. I didn't want to say this earlier for fear of jinxing it. As we got closer to it, there's a good friend of the show, a woman named Kara, who contacted me because, and this is just pure luck, by absolute one in a billion happenstance, our friend Kara, one of her best friends, is in the play. And she, you know, she's like, hey, do you want me to hook you up with my friend Ryan? He's in the play. He can probably get you in, maybe get you an autograph, maybe get you whatever. I'm like, damn straight, woman, you know, just make it so. And so we go down to San Diego this weekend. And we're kind of texting back and forth, you know, me to Kara and Kara to her friend and her friend to me and trying to figure out what's what and is Sorkin going to be there or not because there's all this drama going on because I think NBC acts Studio 60 and this is all this drama. Meanwhile, opening night of the play is Tuesday. And so we're getting closer to it and I'm just, you know, and I'm trying not to get my hopes up or whatever. So on Sunday, the guy, Ryan, who is in the Farnsworth Invention, this new Sorkin play, he texts me and he's like, hey, you know, I don't know if Kara told you this or not, but there's a dress rehearsal tonight, Sunday. It's invitation only. I think I can get you in. And so he and I share a phone call. And he's like, you know, would you like to come to this invitation-only dress rehearsal? It's like, it's before opening night. Like, no one has seen it. This would be the first time anybody ever sees it. And he's like, and I think Sorkin might be here. And so I'm just like, yes! What do you need? You know, and meanwhile, I'm like texting this, you know, our friend Karen, be like, if you ever need a kidney, I now owe you anything you need for the rest of your life. So, long story short, we get there on this past Sunday, a couple days ago. We get there. My wife and I are kind of standing in the lobby, and there's maybe, I don't know, maybe 70 people there. I mean, the place probably holds 300. There's about 70 people there, mostly just tech and crew, couple friends and family. We're standing there. I hear this rustle. I look behind me, and I catch the back of somebody's head as he's walking by. And I tell my wife, I'm like, I think that's Aaron Sorkin, you know, but I wasn't sure. And I didn't see him again. We go in, we sit down, the director comes out, says, hey, thanks for coming to the dress rehearsal, you know, blah, 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 labor of love, blah, 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 new Aaron Sorkin. Lights go down, the play goes off, and the play just goes off without a hitch. It's fantastic, by the way. It's just, I'm not a big theater guy. I'm not like a big fan of going to see a play. It's not really my deal. But, I mean, it's just fantastic. I mean, it's funny and profane and hilarious and fast-paced. I mean, it's an Aaron Sorkin, you know, play. I mean, it's exactly what you expect it to be. Play gets done. We walk out, and I'm just like, man, that was so great. This over the moon, you know, whatever. That's how cool is that? And we gotta thank everybody for getting us into this. I look over, and I look out some glass double doors, and standing outside in sort of an alleyway, just leaning against a wall, smoking, is Aaron Sorkin. And I look over, and I kind of have that moment, and I through clenched teeth, There's no one else there. I don't know why I'm whispering. I go, I think that's Aaron Sorkin. And she literally has to do the thing where she, like, puts her hand in the middle of my back and, like, shoves me towards the door. She's like, right. Go say hello!
A good woman, yes.
Totally. She had, because I was rooted to the ground. I could not move. So I go over to the doors. I open the doors. And I had rehearsed this. I had rehearsed what to say to him all day because I didn't want to be a gibbering fanboy like I am now, even now relating the story.
Right.
So I walk outside, and I look at him, and I say, Mr. Sorkin. And he looks up and he goes, oh, Aaron, please. You know, it's like, you know, and of course, in my head, outwardly, I'm like, oh, Aaron, thank you. I'm Rick. But in my head, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm totally talking to Aaron Sorkin. You know, and he's just becoming like a 12-year-old girl. Yeah, and anyway, it was very cool. I shook his hand and I said, thank you for your love of language, you know, and your love of words.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, what a beautiful thing to say. And I said,
oh, geez.
He did. That's exactly what he said. I said, thank you for your love of language and love of words. And he said, what a beautiful thing to say. And then I said, and this is the really true part. I said, sports night forever changed the way that I write. So thank you. And the play was great. And best of continued success. And thanks a lot. And he said, oh, thank you. You know, and then my wife introduced herself. And then we skedaddled into the night. And we scurried away. I didn't, you know, I wanted to do an autograph or a picture. Like,
good
I just,
job. Good job on that. Good
yeah.
job. Not pulling the taffy too far.
Yeah. And I don't want to be like, another, can I get a picture with you? You know, because he's Aaron Sorkin. Who am I? So.
And I feel like, you know, if you really know someone, then you get a picture. You know, it makes sense. But
I mean, it was just so great. I mean, it was in, done, out, gone, perfect. You know what I mean? It's just, and that was my whole thing. I told my wife, I'm like, okay, now we have to get to the parking lot without, like, tripping, without falling. It's funny, we actually went back Tuesday to see it again on opening night, and he actually was there opening night, and at a certain point, I couldn't avoid Aaron Sorkin. He was everywhere I went. We went there last night, opening night, and we're sitting there waiting for the play, and it turns out that he's sitting in our same row to watch the play, and so he's like, pardon me, and he's like scooching by me. And it's like I had this nightmare of him, like, tripping on my shoes and falling to the ground. And I'm, you know, so, and then as we left the play last night, I walk out into the lobby, and he was standing by a door talking to somebody, and I very nearly walked into the back of him. So the whole, that Tuesday night just became an exercise in, like avoiding him so that I didn't ruin it somehow. It became like a bad Seinfeld.
Right.
So, anyway.
Yes, you wouldn't try and go too far.
So there you go.
Did this really happen this way? It's like you did actually write this in your head, and this didn't actually happen.
This, and my wife will be a character witness for this. It happened just as I described it. I mean, it was really fantastic. And I told Sarah earlier, I realized this is a thing that almost no one but me cares about. But, you know, but anybody who has, you know, listened to me or, you know, and I've done a couple of stage things and, you know, some small, like, film stuff and whatever. And anybody who's seen any of that stuff knows just what a huge imprint Aaron Sorkin made on me. I mean, it's incalculable, the impact that he had on the writing that I do. And just, you know, and I get to check somebody off my people I'd like to meet thing on MySpace. So that's good. So, I mean, it really was great. And I'm, you know, and in radio, Sarah and I have talked about this before. It's not like we're players or whatever, but, I mean, we've met our share of people. I mean, I've met a handful of rock stars and a couple actors and, you know, I've interviewed whoever. I mean, I've interviewed, like, you know, the Don Rickles of the world or the Henry Rollins or Weird Al or whoever, a certain level of celebrity.
Sure.
But this just completely, this is just far and away. It just blows everything away. I mean, it's just, it almost was like meeting a fictional character. It was just my brain could not, and actually still not, can still not conceive, that's some interesting syntax, still cannot conceive that I shook hands with and spoke to Aaron Sorkin. It really is, I can't even process it,
and
even now.
Your words were praised by him.
And he said, what a beautiful thing to say. That's what he said. With class and sophistication, as he does all things.
I mean, you almost can't, it's all ridiculous. You almost can't. It's almost, the only thing else he could have said is, you're obviously very skillful and talented yourself.
And what a stylish young man you are. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. The rest of that night, and then Tuesday, when he was also at the opening night, it became, and this doesn't ever happen to me because I don't ever meet anybody important. It just became an exercise in don't F up. Don't trip in front of him. Don't spill. I have this horrible nightmare of, like, him edging by me to get to his seat and me pouring hot coffee into his crotch by mistake. And just, you know, then I'd have to kill myself. So, Anyway, so there you go. So that's how Rick Emerson spent his weekend, Lisa Godin.
I'm thrilled for you. I'm only sad for your future weekends, because, geez.
Oh, nothing can measure up. No, nothing. I told my wife that. I'm like, that's it. That's it. It's just time to go overdose in a cheap motel somewhere, because nothing will ever match up to this. There's just nothing. So, anyway, I don't even know what's going on in the world that I could talk about right now that would rank anywhere near.
Yeah.
It seems like in the spirit of Aaron Sorkin, I really ought to be talking about something political, but I don't even really know what I could conjure up. Let me just ask you this before I ask you this one political question.
Okay.
If you had to rank the three celebrities that you would like to meet, who it is possible for you to meet, in other words, not Gandhi.
Right.
Who would they be?
Oh, boy, the pressure's on. I would like to meet Vladimir Putin. I just think he's an interesting fellow. I think I'm very interested in what his plans are. Although Boris Yeltsin also would be a lot more fun if I'm going to go the Russian direction.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
One of those two guys. Probably Nelson Mandela, I would say, I would like to meet. And I think I'd like to spend a really long time with George W. I'd like to really kind of get my hands around that.
is that just because you want... How do I put this? Is that really just because you want to know if it's...
I really want to be able to judge for myself sort of how he responds to things and how he thinks through things and what his thoughts are like and, you know, just unscripted, you know, just kind of stuck in a room there. Talking for a couple hours.
I have a friend of mine, actually, who more than anything says he wishes he could interview or have dinner with Joseph Smith, who founded the Mormon Church.
Oh, okay.
Because he's like, I want to get that guy in a room and like, give him the hard questions. Like, I want to know. So, interesting. All right.
Yeah, right.
Apparently, I was talking to Tim Riley at the AM970 news desk about this. Apparently, the British are pulling half of their troops out of Iraq, but I didn't think there was anybody left. I thought there was, like, one guy at one of those, like, Lucy Van Pelt, the psychiatrist, is in booths there.
No.
I mean, who's left?
They've got 7,000 troops still in Iraq, and they're pulling out 1,500 in the next couple of months. It's one of those phased withdrawals. Of course, the troops are all going to move from being sort of closer to the action areas to an airport where there'll be support. Then ultimately they'll move out. And it looks like more troops also, if this plan keeps going in this direction, as I think Blair would like it, then even more British troops will be gone by Christmas. But he says he does plan to keep some British troops in Iraq through 2008. What's fascinating here, of course, is the spin. Democrats say this just shows our allies are running for the hills. They're getting out of Dodge as fast as they can. The White House, however, is saying, no, this shows that everything in southern Iraq is going very well, and they don't need British help anymore. You know, I think my thing is that clearly, when you look at this in perspective with the numbers, you're right. 7,000 British troops there now. We're surging by almost three times that many. We're sending 21,000 troops in just as a surge, a supposedly temporary surge right now, intended to be temporary anyway. So, you know, these 7,000 troops, Great Britain obviously has far fewer troops there in Iraq than we do, but it seems that the U.S. clearly needs more soldiers in some areas. So could Great Britain just move those troops from, if things are going so well in the south, from the south to Baghdad? Well, they're not going to.
Well, is Britain just leaving sort of a tokenistic number of troops there just so they can look W in the eye and say that they're still supporting us?
I think so. I think Democrats would certainly like to say that on the Hill, but it's not clear to me what's going on there. I think they have accepted responsibility for those areas in southern Iraq, and I think that they're also saying we do need some sizable force to be left in this area to make sure it remains stable. So I don't think it's just a token few thousand troops. I think that they're leaving those troops there with some purpose in the south still.
All right, there you go.
Meanwhile, this is what you're not hearing today because of the Great Britain story. Apparently, Denmark also made an announcement today about its Iraq troops, saying that they are going to pull out their, 460 troops by the end of the year.
That'll show us. There you go. That one really. See, when you've lost Denmark, you've lost everything.
Right. Oh, by August, actually, they're getting pulled out. And before we go, I have a James Brown update.
Hold on. Let me. I wasn't prepared for this. Hold on.
James Brown is dead.
Okay.
James Brown update.
Yes.
I think we're in day 58 since his death.
Yes.
Still not buried. But Apparently, they've reached a deal, and he may be buried this week in an undisclosed location.
You lie. They're not really going to bury James Brown, really?
That's what it talks about. But the great thing about this story that just came out today, actually, as his children and his the woman who says she is his latest wife, they've agreed, apparently, on this deal. But the great thing in that story is it quotes the director of the funeral home as saying that he actually goes by more or less every day, that he just went by yesterday, James Brown. Coffin and opens it up just to check on him.
Just sort of gives it a feel.
You know, he looks at, and he has this great quote where he says, well, that's the only way I'll know how he's doing.
James, you let me know if you need anything. All right. Good God. What a strange country we live in.
An undisclosed location right now for the burial.
Fantastic. I knew you'd be on top of the important things. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Lisa Goddard from The Hill. Thank you, Lisa.
Sure.
There you go. Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent. Fantastic.
James Brown is dead.
All right. Let's quickly get to Daniel.
Hello.
Daniel, thank you for holding. You won the tickets to see Rockstar Supernova on Friday, Memorial Coliseum.
Yes, if winning is the correct word.
Oh, now, don't be a negative Nelly, sir. They were free. But you did that with the understanding that you would go and be the official stenographer for Supernova.
Well, to be precise, I called in. I was caller number 5. I was put onto the contest, and then with a deeply held afterthought, you said that part of the agreement was that I must go, and I said, yes, I am just barely willing to go.
Yes.
Which made me the perfect correspondent.
You've established that it was grudging.
Yes.
So how was the show, sir?
Well, I have many thoughts about it. The first thing that happened was I picked up the tickets and I tried to give them away.
Thanks for that. I appreciate that.
Well, I went
that's
into,
respect.
I went into some deep Rick Emerson type self-loathing. I thought, why did I get these tickets?
Because you made a pledge to the Rick Emerson show to be the stenographer. That's why.
Yes, it was actually my pathetic desire to audition, unsolicited, albeit, for the role of official Rick Emerson show curmudgeon. I'm 57, which would actually give Tim Riley a youthful feeling, should I ever win that role.
Well, if you come into the show, you'll become 51. That's kind of the way it works. But,
oh, excellent.
All right, so you ended up going to the show. Well, how was the actual show, the Rockstar Supernova show?
Do you want to hear about Delana also?
I mean, from when you went in, and like, so who took the stage and in what order and who sucked?
Well, first I was outside. I called people. I have to tell you, I called friends and people said, oh, gee, you know, I'd love to go or take the ticket.
Washing my hair, though. Yeah.
And, gosh, I'm going to go see this band in North Portland. And I said, what's the band? They said, I don't know. So I don't think the band even existed. People were just ducking left and right.
Your friends had other plans. Yes.
Other plans like Burgerville or something.
Okay.
And anyway, but I do have to say that part of what enticed me was I've never heard Dave Navarro play guitar.
We really got to move this along.
Oh, I have so many thoughts.
All right, pick the three best ones.
Thank you, Sarah. I was looking at Sarah like...
That's why we've got to start the news hour. We wanted to pick you up before.
What
stands out in your mind about the show?
Would it be easier for you? Would you like to consolidate your thoughts and we can speak with you later in the program, Daniel?
Consolidate my thoughts. I can get it to three thoughts.
That's a good idea. We consolidate your thoughts. It's there you go. That's Daniel. Scotty, would you talk to Daniel? Help Daniel.
I don't know. I was supposed to be the bad guy.
I'm like, it's got to go. It's taking forever. Oh, the break. Thank you. Yeah, we'll talk to Daniel later on. Sort of put it all in perspective. I know it's a little overwhelming. That's a bit much to process.
God almighty.
All right. Is it Wednesday already? Damn, man. 503-733-2. I had to take multiple days off every week. 503-733-2970. Stay there. The Rick Emerson Show continues with the new news hour around the corner.